I only have three folders. How can I get them so confused? We're on. All right. Julie, Randy, you guys ready?
I'm ready.
Jules?
Yeah.
All right. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Calker meeting 12th floor of the Capitol today for our regular scheduled commission meeting. It is Wednesday, March 12th, approximately 10 a.m. I have one just opening comment on the positive side. You noticed that the North Dakota State Bison won the Summit Championship in basketball last night, so I'm pretty excited about that. I was disappointed when rugby got beat in the championship because a young man from Oak Grove got a hot hand with the three-pointers and beat him, but that happened for the Bison last night, which allowed them to win, so I'm excited about that. So not only are we football champions, we're now basketball champions. Looking forward to the Final 64. So with that, I have nothing further to add. Commissioner Christman?
Well, it's hard to follow anything Bison-related, you know, but I just wanted to take a moment to talk about the fact that I had the opportunity since the last commission meeting to go to Mississippi and tour the new Kemper plant that's under construction and the associated new coal mine that's being developed right next door. It was interesting because the people that kind of were our tour guides and took us over to the plant to meet the plant people and then did the tour of the coal mine. These are coal mine employees. One's a North Dakota native, and the other is a South Dakota native who lived for quite a number of years in North Dakota up at Hazen and who I did not know well, but actually did know him while he was there. And so it was kind of like a old home time, in fact. And it was wonderful seeing that brand new mine being developed and something that doesn't happen often, but it's exciting when it does. As for the plant, which was probably really more the reason to be down there on the tour, it was also interesting because we're talking about a multi-billion dollar power plant that is going to have the capability of capturing the CO2, and it will be shipped, and they have contracts with oil drillers to use that for enhanced oil recovery. But probably what's maybe the most shocking about it is the fact that it came in as an expensive project with federal money associated with it to make it happen. I think it was proposed to be like $2.4 billion, and quickly it was apparent that it was over budget and they were raising it to quite a bit higher, and so they built into the consumer's rates even something higher than that to leave a little bit of extra flexibility, and now the estimated costs are far in excess of what they have built into the rates already. And so these things are enormously expensive. Hopefully, through the lessons that are learned in a project like that, we are able to come up with ways to potentially do that in a less expensive way in the future. But, you know, you only learn by trying, too. And so I think people should be commended for making an effort at something, and both the companies involved and the government for trying this, and hopefully as policymakers within the states and within the country, we're smart enough to leave ourselves enough time to learn from mistakes and not just rush in. And it's been one of the things that we've discussed regarding EPA carbon limit proposals, that the EPA tends to say that this is proof that the technology is there to do this, and the fact is the plant hasn't even started yet, and hopefully we all will take a step back, let it happen, and gather the information and learn from it before we put down requirements to do this kind of thing on everyone. So very interesting process, on the subject of a new mine opening, stay tuned. There'll be more on that when we get to the Commissioner Christman portfolio.
Thank you, Randy. Commissioner Fedorjak?
I'll follow up with Randy's comments a little bit in terms of both the EOR and the EPA's regulations. My concern, as you have said, is how these regulations evolve and develop. And I think what you're saying is this industry is just getting started. And I have great concerns that the potential EPA regulations could cut this industry off at the knees before it ever gets fully developed and gets a chance to mature and be affordable for the baseload generation using coal and the long-term needs of both our country and the world. I think that's where we have the most opportunity for this type of technology is develop it and perfect it in the U.S. and make it available to the world where we're hearing the entire U.S. coal fleet is being duplicated on a global scale every 5 years. So coal-fired generation is here to stay globally, and we need to be the innovators to make sure that that is a clean and environmentally safe process. So that's my two cents worth there. I would also like to follow up and say I'd like to add to our admin discussion a symposium on enhanced oil recovery and begin discussions on how we can make that happen either this summer or early fall. I think the time is ripe for that, and I think it's a good time for us to bring together the players, both from the ERC, who we know are looking at this, have a lot of research to share, players from the industry who can talk about the maturity level of the Bakken, when is the time right, and players from the coal industry as well, and the utilities, to discuss how we can not just talk about this, but begin determining how this would work in North Dakota and what kind of timeframes we're looking at. And so I think we are hearing a lot of talk about that, and I'd like to have us bring all the key players together and have a conference or a symposium on that issue. Otherwise, I don't have any additional opening comments, so thank you.
All right, perfect. Okay, we have a few items on consent. I would move passage of the consent items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes.
And Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco was running the show today. Alana, thank you for helping out while Daryl's out and about. Okay.
Weird to hear a different voice. I had to look over who was there.
So who's going to keep an eye on us when you're sitting up here, Alana?
Oh, yeah.
You can do both?
I can do both.
All right, okay, we'll move to the regular scheduled agenda. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission Damage Prevention Enforcement Action concerning Bluestone Construction, Inc., case number GS13-801.
Second.
The North Dakota Public Service Commission has determined that Bluestone Construction is a North Dakota corporation with principal offices in Minot, North Dakota. MDU is a North Dakota corporation with principal offices here in Bismarck. On September 18th of 2013, the commission received a third-party damage complaint from MDU. And basically, the commission staff investigated and determined that certainly an excavation took place from Bluestone. They were digging in the area of 515 Northeast 8th Street in Minot. They did not provide an excavation notice within the 48 hours that was required by law. The staff determined that this was not made in time of emergency. The operator has been reimbursed for the damages. It looks like the one-inch plastic gas main was damaged during the excavation. The one customer lost service for 1 hour. The approximate damages were $75, so the company has been reimbursed once again. Luckily, no one was injured or killed because this gas mains, of course, are very dangerous to be hitting. The company doing the excavating was digging footers for a new foundation of a previously flooded home. And so we continue to work on getting the awareness out there, continue to see the companies such as MDU and Otter Tail and others that continue to have zero tolerance for third-party excavators, and I'm glad they're reporting these because I don't know that we've seen necessarily an uptake in incidents. I think we've seen an uptake of reporting, so I really appreciate that because if we don't know about them, we can't do anything about it. And so that's the work that we continue to do through North Dakota One Call, through the Common Ground Alliance. I think it's very important. So in this case, basically, Bluestone Construction agrees that everything was as the staff recommended it, that they did, in fact, not have a call before a dig ticket. They did, in fact, damage the facilities, and they paid for it. So the commission will fine them a fine of $1,000 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 business days of this order. And, of course, the $1,000 doesn't go to the PSC. It goes to the general fund. We've had a lot of discussion in this commission about the whole call before you dig and whether the fines are appropriate. I still believe the fines are appropriate given the range of $0 to $25,000. But one of the things I hope to visit with my colleagues about as we get closer to the session is adding a provision in there that if we have excavators that continue to violate call before you dig and the money doesn't seem to get their attention, we look at perhaps going after their license. The states that have very robust programs that have been successful have really determined that the monetary fine is not what deters them. It's the ability for commissions to go after their license. And we've even seen cases in the past where we fine companies and they refuse to pay it. And so we could add that provision in there where if after a certain period of time the companies don't, and we're in this order, it directs them 10 days. But if within 10 days if they don't pay the fine, then perhaps we could institute proceedings to go after their license. So Alana and I visited about that legally. I'm trying to talk to the industry as well as the people that do one call. There seems to be broad support out there. And, you know, we've heard so much about, you know, the spill response and how spills happen in North Dakota. And we just can't forget that the big reason spills happen is third-party damage. I mean, the companies and pipe failures, those tend to be a very, very small percentage of the incidents. So this is certainly in order, and I appreciate the staff's work on this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none?
I would just add to that I think this is another example of how the commission has moved over time as the conditions demand it to play a strong enforcement role. I think traditionally the commission has been more of had more of an attitude and approach for bringing people into compliance, and I think that has worked very well for decades. But as the pace of development increases statewide, it's appropriate and it's happening that we are enforcing and taking a more active role in enforcing penalties against bad actors. A vast majority of the people operating in North Dakota are doing so in good faith and with good practices. But there are bad actors out there. And this is another example of the commission coming down on one of those who has violated the laws and needs to pay closer attention to the rules and the requirements of the one call. So I, again, applaud Brian Kalk's leadership in this area and hope that this is working. Hope this works long-term to bring people into compliance.
Well, and to caveat what Julie said, to add to it, Julie and I were up in SRT here a couple weeks ago. We had a forum there, and we actually heard back from the head at Verendry Electric, which they had filed a complaint, and we fined the individual $2,000, and he was upset it wasn't enough. And we tried to walk Bruce through the process that the first time, here's the protocol. But the frustration out there of those that have this infrastructure is really increasing. So I think it's very appropriate that we continue this discussion.
Any further discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Does the motion carry?
Motion carries. Sorry. I haven't done this for a while. Okay.
Darryl. It's harder than it looks, isn't it, Alana?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
All right.
Item BK2. I move the commission fine the March 6, 2014 complaint filed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff states a prima facie case, serve the complaint on the respondent, Tom's Backhoe Service, Inc., and issue a notice of hearing in case number GS13-712.
Second.
In March of this year, the PSC advocacy staff filed a formal complaint alleging violations of North Dakota One Call and requested the commission fine Tom's Backhoe Service, Incorporated, responsible for violating one call law, and impose a penalty of $500. In this particular case, that's what the staff recommended when they got the complaint. In the previous cases, when the staff presents the findings to the companies have basically said, okay, we agree, and they've entered into some type of a consent order, and we've moved forward. In this particular case, the staff made the recommendation of $500. The owner of Tom's Backhoe Service says no and is requesting a formal hearing. So we will be scheduling a formal hearing for this later on today in our scheduling portion of it. But a little background, Tom's Backhoe Service is a Brainerd, Minnesota company. They were doing excavating in the Minot area, particularly 3500 Southwest 4th Street. he struck a one-inch service line feeding the building. So the way this is going to play out is that we'll set the hearing date today. We'll appoint advocacy staff later on. I think Pat will be our advocacy staff on this. Aaron and you. And the company, Tom's Backhoe Service, will be served this. One thing I would point out for everyone listening is that the staff recommended a violation of $500. If this goes to full hearing, it's $0 to $25,000 is the realm that the commission has at its disposal. So when the staff makes their offer on what they feel appropriate, is based on a matrix that we've set up. I just want to make sure everyone understands that even though staff has recommended $500, it could be whatever the commission, it could be zero, and it could be $25,000. So I look forward to scheduling this and continuing to see how this all plays out.
Is it time for discussion?
Yes.
Okay. This one was interesting because Tom's Backhoe said, you know, we don't think so. And when you look into the case, they've you know, asserted that the line varied in depth too much, and they couldn't expect that type of variation across the line some like 15 times or 11 times during that project. And so this will be an interesting hearing.
We've had previous cases where it was reservation telephone where it came about the depth of it, and it's below that mark in that case, whether it was 1 inch or 25 feet. But we kind of did have that discussion, but that's exactly the case that's or the situation that will come out here.
And I think, you know, because we don't want to get into the merits of the case or prejudge it, but I think the important message just at this stage in the game is that while we have this one call system and over time it has evolved into something with more teeth in it, it's still not something where we're just going around penalizing people and that's the end of it. If there are circumstances that they feel aren't being properly weighed in, they do have a chance for a fair and open hearing, and I'm looking forward to that because I think that circumstances are important.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
All right, thank you, Lana. And finally, item BK3. I move the commission add consumer affairs to Commissioner Fedorchak's portfolio.
Second.
The little background on this, in January of 2009, my first commission meeting, we assigned portfolios, and there was a very robust discussion between Commissioner Kramer, myself, and Commissioner Clark about the consumer affairs portfolio. Basically, the decision at that point in time was that we all do consumer affairs, and if you're doing pipeline safety, you'll deal with those consumer concerns. If you're dealing with grain elevators, you'll deal with them that way. But I will tell you that over the last 6 years, it became apparent to me that we needed to get back to having one commissioner have the oversight of it. And Commissioner Fedorchak, her joining the commission really brought that skill set. And I know there's some things that it also changed with Stacy coming on board, but I'm excited that we're reinstating the consumer affairs portfolio, and I think it's a really good idea. So
we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Commissioner Kalk, I'm excited about this too. This was an idea you threw at me the very first commission meeting I attended, and I wanted some time to think and evaluate how the commission operated, whether the current system was the best way or whether we should go back to this previous method. And I think that you are absolutely right. I think this is going to be – we've done a good job with consumer complaints. I don't think that there's been a lack of attention in this area, but having one – commissioner focus on it, I think will help us take a closer look at trends, be more involved with the staff that are working directly with this, and making sure that we're really doing the absolute best we can to provide top-notch public service and being very efficient and friendly in how we respond to the consumers who are contacting our office. The other piece of it that I think I'd like to expand upon and have been working on some in the last year, and we'll work on more in the future with Stacy, is how do we better inform the public about our processes? How do we improve the public notice of our meetings and our hearings? How do we let the public know how they can become engaged, how they can become aware, make our materials available easily on the internet? All this aspects of good public information distribution is an area that I've worked on for 20 years and an area that I look forward to addressing more specifically here at the Commission. I think we do a nice job. I think we can do better. And I think the circumstances of the state and the increased development here and the increased busyness at the Commission gives us an opportunity to do that and really make sure that we're using all the possible avenues to reach the public and inform them and engage them in our processes.
Yeah, one of the things I think it'll really help out is we find ourselves in the Commission, people wanting us to get involved in so many things that we don't necessarily have direct jurisdiction on. And I think that we have a responsibility to help broker relationships, and I think that's part of this will really help out. As you're talking about the EOR, we maybe directly don't have a role in that, but it certainly could affect electricity prices down the road. So it's that kind of thing that I really think this will be great, and I'm glad you're going to do it. So thank you.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes.
All right, well, thank you, Anna. That concludes the items in my portfolio, the highly awaited Commissioner Crispin motion.
All right, Mr. Chairman, RC1. I move the Commission conditionally issue surface coal mining permit number NACC-1301 to Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC, to permit 84.24 acres to allow the construction of the shop, office, dragline erection site, and related support facilities at the proposed Coyote Creek Mine south of Zapp in Mercer County.
Second.
On May 31st of 2013, Coyote Creek Mining Company filed the application for surface coal mining permit, NACC 1301, and that's an important number. Later on, we'll talk about the associated application that's not involved here, and that's 1302, where the mining would actually take place. But 1301 here is to permit 84.24 acres for the proposed Coyote Creek Mine. The permit area is approximately 10 miles southwest of Beulah. The permit is for the mine shop, the office, dragline erection site, and related support activities for the new mine, and is scheduled to begin delivering coal to the Coyote station in May of 2016, so just over 2 years from now. A separate permit application for the actual mining areas has been filed, as I mentioned. That would be 1302, and is currently under review by the Reclamation Division. The permit area is located primarily in a portion of Section 30 and just a little bit in a portion of Section 31. And I point that out, and I'll get into that a little more later, so that does involve a section line closure, but I'll get into that more later. No coal removal will occur within the permit area. Actual mining activity will occur on lands west of this permit area on much of the nearly 8,100 acres included in permit application number 1302. Eventually, this 84-acre permit will be incorporated into that larger permit that will contain the actual coal mining areas. The mine support facilities constructed in this permit area are planned to be used for the life of the coal mining operation, and the extended mine plan shows that mining is expected to continue until 2040. Construction of the mine facilities are expected to start early this spring when weather and field conditions allow work to begin. As I mentioned earlier, Coyote Creek Mine Company will be seeking approval from Mercer County to close the section line right-of-way between sections 30 and 31, and it's important in this part of the discussion to distinguish between a road and a section line, because being familiar with this area, at the point it enters this area, the road actually leaves the section line and is not on it. An existing county road enters the site from the east and then turns to the southwest to provide access to a nearby occupied farmstead. The farmstead is outside of this permit area. The mining-related activities that will occur in this 1301 permit area do not affect that access road. However, even though this is closing the section line will not affect that access road, there's a special condition that's going to be attached to this permit requiring Coyote Creek to submit copies of the County Road Authority's approval documents before any mining activities occur within 100 feet of the section line. Notice of permit application was published in the Hays and Star, the Beulah Beacon, and the Bismarck Tribune newspapers by Coyote Creek in July and August of 2013. The Reclamation Division notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and advisory committee members of the revision application. No objections or requests for formal conference were received on this application. A surety bond has been submitted. Of this 84.25 acres, about 33 acres will be disturbed in the permit by construction. The Reclamation Division has determined that a bond in the amount of $666,171 is sufficient at this time to cover the required reclamation, restoration, and abatement work for these disturbances. The surety bond filed by the Coyote Creek Mining Company is in the amount of $800,000. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this permit application and respectfully recommends that it be conditionally approved. And that condition, again, is that for closure of that section line, the approval from the County Road Authority.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just add a point of reference on that Commissioner Crispin talked about today. The staff determined a bond of $666,000 was required, and the company's filing a bond of $800,000. This week we had a work session on what to do for wind farms and decommissioning, and we basically out of that work session are going to be requiring some type of financial assurances from wind farms now that the 10-year mark is passed. So it's interesting that what the coal mines have been doing for years is now a provision that we anticipate going on wind farms. So I think it's good, but just a point of reference to show out just the way the coal companies do a very good job from cradle to grave in this whole process.
My only comment to add would be that this is a very thorough process. There's nearly 20 different findings just for this portion of this project, which is the basically the construction of the shop site. And so I think it again speaks to our good strong process for evaluating these permits and working with the companies to make sure that all the appropriate environmental, cultural resources are protected and everything is done in a way that is going to preserve the land long term.
I would just want to add one more thing for historical references, because we do a lot of important things up here. I think that's why we all, you know, chose to want to be involved with this commission. To me, this is a huge landmark kind of a case. I'm not sure I intended to and then neglected to follow up with Jim to find out exactly the dates of when the last brand new coal mine had initial siting approval given. I'm guessing that the last time that happened, probably the majority, and we're not going to name names, but probably the majority of this commission were probably still in high school.
I was in grade school. Just saying.
Right. I was not in either one.
You were out driving around on this land doing other things then.
Matter of fact, how I know that road doesn't go on the section line there. But back to the point of all this.
What was that? You're older than me?
a rather monumental thing occurring here. I talked about it, the excitement of it down in Mississippi, and we have the same thing here. Great jobs for some great people, and providing dependable and affordable power to people, not just in North Dakota, but across a big portion of our country. And I'm really proud of the work that our minds do to, you know, to get a project like this ready and up to speed, that our power plants are doing to work through all the tough issues that they face in order to stay in the business of using coal to provide power, and the work that our commission people do. It's an enormous process to go through all of the work that needs to be done to prepare something like this in order to meet both the high standards of OSM and the high standards of the state of North Dakota. And as a landowner and nature lover, I'm really proud of what we do to make things like this happen in a responsible way. And so and I think it's really an exciting day.
I did talk to Jim about when the last time was we did something like this. And so since you brought it up, I'll share that because it is a really monumental day. The last time there was a mine permitted like this, and we're just in the initial stages of this, but was in 1976 with the Freedom Mine.
We were all in high school or before.
this mine is, they plan to mine 2.5 million tons a year, and the Freedom Mine mines 15 million tons a year, I guess. So this is considerably smaller than that, but yet still a large mine and operating on what approximately 8,000 acres over the next 25 years. So it is a monumental day, and this is just the first step of the process, just the one portion of the mine. The larger permit is still under consideration, and I did ask Jim some questions about that, too, just to walk through the time frame. They're finishing up their completeness evaluation of that permit, and then there'll be a public comment period, and our staff will go through technical review with the company back and forth until all the issues are addressed, and after which time we'll have an opportunity to look at that again. And if we grant the permit, then the public will have an opportunity to oppose after that fact as well. So there is a public comment period here that will be coming up this spring. I believe it's 60 days, where anybody who's interested can request informal conference to address their concerns, and then it'll go into the technical review stage. Simultaneously with that, I'm guessing it'll be another, I don't know, year or so, Randy, for the...
I'm not sure the time frame either. It's
a long process.
It's a big process, but...
very thorough.
Because it's in North Dakota, we'll get to it in a timely way, too.
Exactly. And I think he said 100 to 150 employees at this new mine, so... And they're going to be erecting a drag line out there on this spot that we're, is before us today, which I've equated to an adult man's Lego project. Year long.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Our Commissioner Fedorchak.
Okay, I'll jump in on my first item here. I move the Commission adopt the order reissuing certificate and permit in the joint application of Basin Transload and Tesoro High Plains to transfer certificate of corridor compatibility number 141 and route permit number 154 from Basin Transload to Tesoro High Plains, case number PU-13-734.
Second.
On January 16th of 2013, the Commission issued a Certificate of Corridor Compatibility number 141 and Route Permit number 154 to Basin Transload LLC for a construction of a 7-mile, 10-inch diameter crude oil pipeline beginning at Tesoro High Plains Pipeline and extending west towards a storage facility near Columbus. On October 9th of 2013, Basin Transload and Tesoro High Plains submitted a joint application to transfer the certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit. On August 21st, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. No comments or requests for hearing were received. On October 31st, we received an affidavit of Greg Henderson, Assistant Vice President of Tesoro, stating that Tesoro agrees to assume the rights and obligations of this certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit. And so today we have this transfer certificate in front of us.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries.
I move the Commission approve Otter Tail Power Company's Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider, case number PU-14-14.
Second.
This is a renewable energy rider that was approved by the Commission in 2008. I believe the first rider took effect in 2009, and essentially it's a rider to recover the costs of three wind projects for Otter Tail Power. They're the Langdon Wind Project, the Ashtabula Wind Project, and the Laverne Wind Project. The cost of this rider increased for a few years and now is on the downward slope, and the rider before us today will result in the average residential customers decreasing their bill about 78 cents per month. So I recommend we approve this change.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Maybe just a quick thought on riders is that when we first did this on the riders, I wasn't convinced that it was the best way to do it. But I think the riders in this case are the best way to do it because it allows for these changes, like Julie brought up, 78 cents per month going down. If this would have been something would have been put in rates, this wouldn't have happened during this year. So riders, I think, are okay for the most part because it allows you to keep a much better visibility of costs as they fluctuate annually. So.
And I think that in this case, you were here when this was created, but with the wind projects, they tend to fluctuate more.
Absolutely.
And there's higher costs in the front end, and then they depreciate over time. So
we did
the next time Otter Tail comes before us with the rate case, because this rider has kind of gone through that and we're seeing it decrease now, we'd have the opportunity to roll these costs into the rate base at that point, and
absolutely,
at which point if we did that, we'd get rid of the rider.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. Believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest in finding the cases involved similar questions of fact, law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate under North Dakota Admin Code Section 69-02-04-04 the joint application of Hess Corporation and Hess Tioga Gas Plant LLC for transfer of route permit case number PU-14-95 and transfer of corridor certificate case number PU-14-96 to Hess Tioga Gas Plant LLC and issue a notice of opportunity for consolidated hearing.
Second.
That sounds a lot more complicated than it is. Really, what we're doing is this Hess Corporation has asked for a transfer of permit for construction and transfer of site certificate application to be consolidated. Basically, the issues to be considered are whether Hess Tioga Gas Plant LLC agrees and is able to comply with the terms and conditions of the permit for construction and site certificate issued to Hess Corporation, which was way back when in the 90s, and whether the requested transfers are compatible with the public interest. So any members of the public who have comments or would like to request a hearing must let us know by April 15th of 2014.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries.
My final item on the agenda today, I move the commission suspend the tariff and proposed rider filed in MDU companies' applications for a generation resource recovery rider tariff, case number PU-14-108, and rates case number PU-14-109.
Second.
This is an application by MDU to recover the cost for their Heskett 3 gas plant in a tariff. Basically, the Heskett gas plant, a little bit of an update on that project. It was originally estimated, let me get my numbers here, that the plant would cost 85.6 million. That includes the cost of the turbine, which was originally estimated at 54.4 million, and interconnection costs, which was estimated at 2.2 million, and the natural gas pipeline estimated at 18.4 million. Further along in the project construction, the current capital cost is estimated at 76.1 million, and that includes 50.4 million for the turbine, 1.2 million for the pipeline or for the interconnection cost, and 20.1 million. So the turbine is coming in quite a bit under budget, and the pipeline is a little bit over budget, but total cost is just about $10 million less than originally anticipated. What MDU is proposing here is that these costs be recovered through a new generation rider. They're estimated that that would result in a $3.62 per month increase for their average residential customers, and it would be slightly offset by a fuel and purchase power adjustment of that would expire for the purchase of a capacity credit that they have been using in the interim while this plant was being constructed. So the total amount recovered for this initial period would be $7.3 million by this rider. And this basically just sets forward the process for evaluating this application.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just would add, I look forward to the opportunity when we have this, whether it's a formal or informal, because it kind of really what this comes down to is either we will do a rider or it will go into a general rate case. Mm-hmm. This is what it will come down to. The commission has already issued an ADP in this project. It was a very good project. It's a generation right in the Bismarck-Mandan area. So I look forward to the potential formal or informal on this.
And I should also add that the Heskett 3 in-service date is estimated to be October 1st of this year.
That's good. Did you say October 1st?
August 1st. Okay. August 1st.
That's even better.
Yes.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries.
That concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. I just had one thing I was going to put out in the beginning of the meeting, but I was so excited about the Bison victory, I forgot to bring it out. Some of you may have noticed the FERC, which our good colleague Tony Clark is part of now, sent out a news release March 7th of 2014 directing the NERC, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, to set up physical security standards for critical facilities inside the electric power system. So this is the first time this has, quite honestly, become a public dialogue where the FERC has directed this. I've actually had discussions inside North Dakota with our investor-owned utilities about this question for the last couple of years, and even with the North Dakota Department of Homeland Security and even emergency services. So Julie talked about getting together and talk about enhanced oil recovery. It was funny you said that because I was thinking the same thing about we should almost get together and talk about the reliability issue, one reliability issue from the threats of the CO2 regulations, and the second reliability issue of what we're going to do based on what the FERC has directed through the NERC. So I think this whole reliability piece is really coming together very nicely, that the discussion we're having throughout the country, and especially in North Dakota, is with all these changes in generation, how does that affect reliability? And there's also the backdrop of the physical security threat, how that may may affect reliability. The question I just have quickly for our general counsel on this is that we'll have to do a work session on this or something, but you know, if we have if we ever had a case where we go through and we say this is a critical node in the history of the commission?
Not to my recollection.
Because the question that I want to know is that if something is determined a critical node, I don't want that to be public information. That should be something that's held to the company. But then once we become aware of it, it becomes public information. So it's this whole same thing we had about the pipeline mapping discussion with the Department of Homeland Security. So that's one of those questions where you want to have the understanding of what it is, but by the same token, only certain people need to know what that understanding is. So,
yeah. Having been involved in some of the NARUC cybersecurity conferences and discussions, that's a big question. Is, you know, everything we do is in the public, which is great and how it needs to be. But when you talk about protecting strategic infrastructure, you don't really want to be having that discussion in the public about where is the strategic infrastructure. So our role is one that needs to be carefully thought through.
And the way this will probably play out is MDU, Otter Tail, Excel will have facilities that will be critical. And if they have to harden those facilities, they'll have to come back at some point and ask for rates to do that. Mm-hmm. And that probably would be something like a trade secret or something we could deal with. So, but anyway, I just wanted to highlight to anybody listening out there that this is kind of ramped up one more notch with the discussion we've had in the state with the FERC actually issuing an order directing this. So I look forward to this discussion because it's worthwhile discussion. All right, any closing comments from my colleagues?
I do not.
I don't.
We'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
So on that last point, would an Edward Snowden be a FERC nerd narc?
Yes. Absolutely.
That took a little. That was a little stretch. To go on this on the coal mine, who is the parent company of Coyote, or is there a parent company of the
North American Coal?
North American Coal. Okay. Who provides coal to the Coyote plant right now?
Dakota Westmoreland.
Is Dakota Westmoreland out of business now, or?
No, they are continuing business. I believe North American's contract provides to start providing coal to Coyote in 2016, and Dakota Westmoreland, I believe, plans to continue providing coal to the Heskett station. I'm not sure what their plans are. They are a provider of stoker coal to, you know, private individuals and schools and places that get their coal delivered with trucks. I'm not sure if that's going to continue, and I'm not sure exactly all of their operational plans, but as far as I know, they plan to continue operating, and in fact have an expanded mine permit application before the commission.
In terms of what kind of hoops they have to jump through now, is it there's some federal hoops that they have to jump through in order to get this mine permitted?
Well, our permitting process has to meet all the OSM requirements, and so, you know, there's a lot of surveys in advance of making sure there's not environmental or cultural issues, and to the extent that there are, that they're mitigated and that sort of thing, and tremendous amounts of records kept as to what soils are there and how everything is laid out, so that in 25 years when this is all done, of course, now this permit area for today is only the 80 acres up front, but when the whole coal mine is done, that we can get it back to as good or better than it was before.
And you said it's about an 8,000 acre mine, correct?
The next application will be, yes. Yes,
but that will take, as we mentioned, that's going to take a year or more, perhaps. But it depends on the timeline and how quickly things.
Why don't we just have Jim clarify when that might be? What kind of a time frame?
It could be later this year or early next year.
Okay.
Right now, they want to have it had by about this time next year, so they can be in operations.
One of the interesting things that I witnessed in Mississippi at that new mine, you know, they have to have a place to start where they've cleared space out and dug down some and then set up the drag line for the next layer of digging in that. And where their mine permit started, it was sort of like the edge of it, and they didn't have room to work there. And so they actually had to go and get a special permit to dig some right next door to it to have a place for the drag line. So starting something new like that, it takes a lot of advanced planning and strategizing.
And you don't just throw these big drag lines on a truck and haul them around. They're during hundreds, maybe hundreds, but there's 20, 30 different pieces that have to be assembled right on site. So it'll be quite an operation.
Now, the coal mine in, you said Mississippi, correct?
Correct.
What kind of coal is that? Is that lignite or is that bituminous or subbituminous?
No, that's lignite also.
Lignite, okay.
Yeah, that's what makes that site so intriguing. When I was down there, I don't know, 3 months ago, about the process down there for that lignite is the same exact thing we could do here. The coal is almost identical. So with the lessons that learned down there could be applied in North Dakota if we're able to, you know, broker a deal somehow between all the parties like they did in Mississippi, but then it wouldn't be a, you know, $4 billion project. Maybe it's a $1 billion project.
And an interesting little tidbit on that Mississippi mine. I don't know how far that is from the coast. You know, I guess I didn't really look at it on the map. I'm thinking it's like 100 miles or something. It's not a real long distance. Their drag line was a used drag line that was in the United Kingdom. And they purchased it and dismantled it and shipped it over and hauled it in and erected it. And it cost more to haul it from the coast to the mine site than it did to ship it from Europe to America.
Who okay. got the sales tax on?
One more thing that you brought it up, Commissioner Kalk, that you are now going to propose rules in terms of reclamation standards for wind farms. Is that
in the work session that the three of us had, and I'm paraphrasing my colleagues' comments, but we kind of went through four different wind farms that had reached the 10 year mark period, and the two up north that are owned by Basin Electric, we kind of agreed that those will be incorporated in a larger wind farm reclamation. But then the example would be that FPL has two different wind farms that they own in the 20 to 40 megawatt range, and what we left that work session with is that we're pretty committed to having them give us some type of financial assurances that they're going to have the resources to take those down. And we've directed staff to work with the individual companies and see what their request would be, what their desire would be for financial assurances, given the constraints of what the law is. So I think my colleagues will sure jump in if I'm misstating, but I think we're definitely going down that road of requiring financial assurances, just what exactly, what kind.
Just to add on to that a little bit, I think it's important to note that the rules exist. They were developed and approved by the commission, I think, in 2008. And so there are rules for the reclamation of these sites. They give us some discretion to examine at the 10-year period, like Commissioner Kalk said. And at that point, if we deem it necessary to require some sort of financial assurance, we can do that. So we've evaluated all these companies, and I think it's a good idea. Commissioner Kalk thinks it's a good idea. And Randy, I think
absolutely.
It's safe to see. So I think we're going down the path of determining what the assurances would be and working with the companies on that to make sure that they have the resources in place to reclaim these areas when the time comes.
And there is some more work to be done on it, because I think we also want to make sure that everything is done correctly, that if whatever we set turns out to be inadequate and we end up with one of these, that it's not really the state's responsibility either, that it's just something to work with. And I had and neglected to bring it with today. I had a copy of the quote from then-Governor Art Link's speech over in Mandan when he talked about coal reclamation years ago. And you know, the Governor Link and District 33 Senator Bob Straub in those days worked very hard on creating our reclamation laws. In his speech that became quite famous and is often quoted today, yet if you take out the references directly to mining, like the swinging drag lines and stuff, and just exclude those without any other changes, It's kind of amazing how it fits for the wind industry as well, and that you know, we don't want North Dakota to be holding things back. We want to share our energy resources with the nation and the world, but at the same time, when these things cease to operate, if our land is returned back to as good or better than it was before, our grandchildren will say that we provided a job well done.
Yeah. One of the things I think that we're kind of had a lot of discussion about in those work sessions was, do you pick a rate per turbine for reclamation, or do you pick a rate for the project? And it's kind of hard, in my opinion, for turbines because there's such an array of turbines. You can have a 900 kilowatt. You can have a 2.3 megawatt. So right now we're still collecting a lot of different data that varies quite a bit by wind farm. But I think as that matures, we'll see get a little better feel for what will be required. And depending where the wind farms are at, it's such a variation too. A wind farm could be right on a very improved road that it's easy to get a crane out there. A wind farm can be in Hettinger where it's down a long ways from anywhere. So I think this will mature. And we've talked about we have the 10-year mark where we may impose something. I think we're going down that road. But then picking up a review time, whether that review would be in 5 years or 2 years, but it wouldn't be a one shot now at 10 years. It'd be 10 years is the first bite. And we even talked about maybe even getting this in the front end, where just like we just did with the coal, where they put the bond in the front, maybe we put that in the front for the win. Now, that would require some changes, but I know that Commissioner Crispin brought that up, and I wasn't against it, just move cautiously down that road.
Also, I think it's important to note that the companies that came before us during these informal hearings didn't object to any sort of financial assurance requirements. And the companies that we've talked to since in the last year when we've been citing them also didn't object to any financial assurances. So I think that this is something that the industry is supportive of and isn't going to have a problem with.
All right. Nick, do you have anything for us today?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. Going once, going twice? All right, reconvening in how much, 10 minutes, do it?
10, sure.
10 after 11. Thank you all.